In recent weeks, we've been talking about the fact that God created man. The human race hasn't always existed. There was a first man, the first man who ever lived. God created him. And God created that man very good. When God created Adam, Adam was good through and through. He was made in God's own image. He was perfectly truthful because he was like God. He was perfectly kind. He was perfectly pure. He was capable of loving his wife perfectly. He was good. He was very good. He had fellowship with God. He walked with God in the garden. He enjoyed God. There was nothing to drive a wedge between God and Adam. God looked at Adam, whom he had made, and he said, "He's very good." And he was truly very good. And yet, that first man, Adam, rebelled against God. That was the truth that we began thinking about last week. The fact that Adam turned against God. Adam decided that he wasn't willing to obey God any longer. Adam tried to shake off God's control over his life. Adam wanted to be independent of God. He deliberately did something that showed that he was walking away from God. We've all seen examples, haven't we, of a teenager who reaches a point in their life when they say, "I don't want to live in this house anymore. I don't want to have anything to do with my parents from now on. I want to be free." And that teenager has just walked away, rebelled against his parents. Well, Adam rebelled against God. Adam deliberately disobeyed God. It was an act of deliberate, conscious rebellion. Now, the question that we started thinking about last week was this question then. How could that happen? How could someone who was created completely good deliberately do something that was evil? If Adam was good through and through, how could he choose wickedness? What he did was wicked. What he did was ungrateful. What he did was selfish. How could a creature who was good choose what was evil? And those of you who were here last week know what answer I gave to that question. I said, "I don't know. And neither does anybody else." It's one of the great mysteries of the Christian faith, great mysteries of the Bible, how it was that a creature, a man who was good through and through, could choose evil, could want to do what was evil. In the end, we simply have to wait for the day of judgment. We have to wait till the next world to find out the answer to that question. And even then, maybe it's a question that we won't, an answer that we won't be able to understand. Maybe it's something beyond our capacities to understand. And yet it happened. Adam, created perfectly good, did something unspeakably wicked. Now, I said there are some things that we must understand about Adam's choice, about this act of deliberate rebellion. Although we can't understand how it could happen, there are some things we can and must say about Adam's action. We have to say, firstly, that it was ordained by God. It was all part of God's plan, God's purpose. Everything that happens, happens according to God's purpose. God really is sovereign. And God, in his sovereignty, included Adam's fall in his great plan. We've got to say that. But then we've got to say, secondly, that God did not force Adam to sin. We've got to say that God didn't make Adam sin. God didn't put it into Adam's heart to sin. God didn't create Adam in such a way that Adam had to sin. As I put it last week, there was no design fault in Adam. It wasn't that God had left some fatal flaw in Adam, which made it inevitable that he must do this wicked thing. No, he really was created by God, perfectly good. That evil which Adam did didn't come from God. God can't be held responsible for it. It was Adam himself who chose that path of evil. It was Adam himself who chose to turn away from good and to turn to evil. He alone was responsible. I don't know how he could have done that. We know that he and he alone was to blame for the wicked thing he did. And then the third thing we have to say is this, that that final act of deliberate rebellion which Adam committed was only the last step in a progressive departure from God's will. It wasn't that suddenly Adam said, right, I am going to choose to rebel against God now. There had been a step-by-step departing from God's way of thinking, the pattern of life that God had laid down from Adam. And that step-by-step departure finally led to that terrible act of rebellion, to doing the particular thing which God had forbidden. So that was what we looked at last week, or began to look at last week. We began to look at the way in which Adam did fall, the way in which he did move towards that act of rebellion. We began to think how it actually happened. We can't explain how Adam could fall, but we can see something in the Bible of how Adam did fall, what the steps were by which he came to that last appalling act of disobedience. We said that that final act of rebellion arose from a neglect of the pattern that God had laid down. God had laid down what the pattern should be of relationships within his world. God had said that Adam, the man, should be the leader, and that his wife should be following, that the man should be willing to act as the head, and that the wife should follow his headship. God had said that Adam and Eve should rule the beasts. And yet we find when we read Genesis 3 that Adam and Eve had drifted away from that pattern. We find that it's Eve who's debating with the serpent, while Adam is just standing there listening. We find that Adam is leaving it to his wife to handle that situation, where he should have been in the lead. We're finding Adam and Eve listening to advice from a serpent, a beast. Instead of ruling the beasts, they're listening to the beasts, letting the beasts tell them what they think should be done. Now, God had never laid down a command, a law saying to Adam, you must never let your wife talk to the serpent. But there was a pattern, a wholesome, normal pattern, which was clear. And it's clear that Adam and Eve had begun to drift away from that. That was a part of this progress towards that awful act of disobedience. And then we said that this final act of rebellion arose from a desire for things which were good, but which God had forbidden. That's very important to say, isn't it? That Adam, being completely good, couldn't be tempted by anything that was evil in itself. But he could be tempted by things which were good. But things which God had said, these are not for you now. So, Eve looks at the fruit on the tree, and she sees it's really good. It really is beautiful. And it really would be good to taste, and it really was to be desired to make them wise. These are good things. But they were things that God had said, not for you, not now. They were drawn, they were attracted, because they allowed their desire for good things to grow, things which God had forbidden. And then, thirdly, this final act of rebellion happened because the man and the woman allowed that desire for the forbidden thing to grow. See the progression, the way that Eve listens to the serpent and Adam listens alongside her. They shouldn't have been listening to him. They knew that it was forbidden. Once the serpent started suggesting that they should take the fruit, they should simply have said, no, this is forbidden. And they should have silenced the serpent. Instead, they listened to his blandishments. And they discuss the matter and they debate the matter. And then they go over and they look at the tree. And they fasten their eyes on the fruit. And finally, Eve lifts up her hand and she actually picks it and sniffs it. She's playing with temptation. This is what it says in the New Testament. Quote, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when by his own desire he's dragged away and enticed. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to death. That desire was conceived, and then it grew and it grew and it grew because Adam and Eve allowed it to grow. They fed it. They carried on looking at that ever so desirable fruit. They allowed the desire for it to grow within them. They played with the temptation. A fourth point this evening. This final act of rebellion arose because the woman stopped believing absolutely in God and his word. That's what the serpent is doing to her. As she listens to him, as she lets the discussion and the debate continue, as Adam lets her let the discussion continue, her confidence in God's truthfulness is being undermined. Her confidence in what God has said is being eroded. Did God say such and such? Did God really say you must not eat from the tree in the garden? That seems a little bit of an improbable thing for God to say that. He's trying to confuse her, isn't he? Because God never did say that, that you must not eat from any tree in the garden. But he's putting the thought into her mind. Maybe this God of yours can't be trusted to give you things which are good. He's trying to get her confused about what God has said and what God hasn't said. The woman comes back to the serpent. Well, no, we are allowed to eat fruit from the tree. But we mustn't eat fruit from the tree that's in the middle of the garden. We mustn't touch it even. When she quotes God back to the serpent, she seems to be confused because she's embellishing what the Lord said to her. And then the serpent comes in with the direct statement, "You will not surely die." He says, "Whatever God has said, it's not true, you know. God's been misleading you. You can't really believe what he's been saying. For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil." God is motivated by selfishness. God isn't really concerned about you. He's just trying to hold you back from your full development, from your full potential. You could be like him, and he doesn't want you to be, you know. That's why he's given you this one strange command. Don't you think it's strange, Eve, that you should be allowed to eat all the other trees in the garden? None of them harm you, do they? Don't you think it's strange that there should be just one? There's got to be some hidden motive behind that in God's mind, hasn't there? And I'll tell you what it is, Eve. It's that God doesn't want you to be wise. God doesn't want you to be independent. God doesn't want you to grow up. God wants to keep you as a pathetic child all your life, dependent on him. Those are the thoughts that he's injecting into her mind. We don't know how long this conversation went on. Maybe it's very much summarized. It's talked of as if it's a single occasion. Maybe this was the debate, the discussion that went on for day after day, day after day. All the time she's listening to poison. All the time the poison is sinking. All the time her belief is being... She shouldn't have been having this conversation. She shouldn't have been listening to anybody who was slandering God. What reason did she have to disbelieve God? Hadn't he made her? Hadn't he shaped her out of Adam's rib? Hadn't he given her a husband to love her? Hadn't he filled her life with good and delightful things? Well, then why should she believe this plausible-sounding, smooth-tongued serpent rather than believing her God? But the serpent is flattering her, isn't he? The serpent is saying to her, "You know, you could be so wise. You could be so independent. You could be like God yourself." That's flattery, isn't it? She's wanting to hear those things. You would be like God yourself if God weren't holding you back by this unreasonable command. This final act of rebellion came because disbelief of God and God's word entered in. Disobedience sprang from disbelief, at least in the case of the woman. And then, fifthly, this final act of rebellion happened because the man, Adam, chose one of God's gifts above God himself, the giver. the man put a higher value on one of God's gifts than he did on God the giver. Let me explain what I mean. I quoted to you a very important verse last week from 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 14. 1 Timothy chapter 2 verse 14. This is what it says. Adam was not the one deceived. It was the woman who was deceived and became a sinner. Paul says plainly that Adam was not deceived. Adam knew that the serpent was lying. Eve was taken in by the serpent's lies. Adam wasn't. He knew that the serpent was lying. He knew that God's warnings were true. He knew that if he took that fruit from his wife and ate it, he would surely die. That he would bring on himself the ruin that God had threatened. Adam knew that there would be appalling, unspeakable consequences. He knew that he would have the wrath of God resting upon him. He knew that he would be cut off from the life of God. He knew those things. He wasn't deceived. He knew exactly what he was doing when he bit into that fruit. So why? How could he do it? Well, there can only be one explanation, can't there? He does it because his wife has done it before him. And he does it because she wants him to do it. The Lord says to him explicitly in chapter 3 and and verse 17, to Adam he said, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you mustn't eat of it, cursed is the ground. Adam listened to his wife. It had become more important to him to please her than to please God. He wasn't deceived. He knew what God's will was. He knew what the results would be, what the consequences would be. But he couldn't bear the thought of not doing what his wife wanted. Perhaps his thought was, well, she's already eaten the fruit. She's lost already. She's going to die. I would choose to be lost with her. I don't want to carry on living under the favour of God if she isn't going to be there with me. Maybe he thought to himself, well, if now I refuse to stand with her in this, if I refuse to join with her in the action she's chosen, then I'll lose her love. One way or another, he puts his wife before God. That's how he comes to commit this final act of disobedience. She's been deceived. She's been tricked. And now he listens to her. And with full knowledge of what he's doing, he chooses her before God. He decides he loves her more than he loves the God who made him and who gave her to him. She was a wonderful gift to Adam. She was the most wonderful of all the gifts God had given to Adam. She was the one made out of himself. She was his companion. She was the one whom he looked at her and he saw himself reflected in her, and he saw that here was somebody with whom he could be perfectly united. He loved her so much. And now the tragedy is that he's come to love her more than he loves God. And when she says, come on, Adam, please, please, don't say no to me. don't resist me. God, join me in this. He listens to her. How many people, and especially how many men, make the same mistake? They fear that if they obey God's word, they'll lose the person they love best. Sometimes people have said to me explicitly, I don't want to be saved if my wife isn't going to be saved too. I don't want to be in heaven if she's not going to be there. I'd rather be in hell than be in heaven without my wife. I've heard women say, I'd rather go to hell than be in heaven without my husband. Here in this world, people say, I believe everything you've been saying. I believe what you're saying about God and about sin and about God's wrath and about where it will lead. But I simply can't face life in this world if it means being separated, having a wedge driven between me and my family, having a wedge driven between me and my boyfriend, my girlfriend, my husband, my wife. They've got to come first. The tragedy of people who say, people whom God has given to me, they're more important to me than God himself. That was Adam's insane choice. He looks at Eve, he listens, he sees her stretch out her hand to him, and he can't say no to her. He rejects God for the sake of his wife. Now, what was the immediate result? They've both taken the fruit. Eve has done it because she's been deceived. Adam has done it as an act of deliberate, conscious rebellion. His guilt is the greater. What he's done is far more wicked than what she's done. And he's the head as well. He's the one who should have been in taking responsibility for it all. What is the immediate result? The moment that each of them takes that fruit and eats. The immediate result you find in chapter 3 and verse 7. It says in verse 6, she gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. And then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized they were naked. To read that verse in the light of what's gone before, it is just so tragic. Here's Adam, who has rebelled against God, who has discarded God, who's thrown away the presence of God and the love of God and the friendship of God for the sake of his wife, because he doesn't want his relationship with her to be in any way spoiled or overshadowed. Doesn't want a wedge driven between himself and herself. And the moment that he takes the fruit, at that moment, his relationship with his wife is wrecked. At that moment, the perfect intimacy, the perfect openness, the perfect trust that there was between Adam and his wife has been torn apart. Adam and Eve look at one another and they look at themselves and they realize that they are naked. And they're frightened even at the thought of being exposed to one another's eyes. All their intimacy has gone because they no longer trust each other. They now feel vulnerable. That perfect understanding, that perfect unselfishness, that perfect love which held them together has been smashed. They've begun to die. And the first symptom of their dying is that their relationship is dying. Isn't it ironic? Isn't it tragic that Adam wants to keep his relationship with Eve at all costs? And so he does something that destroys his relationship with Eve. What would have happened if Adam, if Eve had eaten the fruit as she did, had offered some to Adam and he said no? What would God have done about that situation? The answer is we don't know. But what we do know is that when Adam did take the fruit, in a moment, everything he had valued most was spoiled. Everything he had fought to keep withered in his hands. The thing that had been his greatest joy here on earth, his intimacy with his wife, had gone sour. He looks at himself, he looks at her, she looks at him, and their heads fall in shame and embarrassment. That's the tragedy. People throw away God for the sake of a human friendship, for the sake of a human relationship. And what do they have in the end? They have nothing. Because in the end, they go to hell. And hell is the place where there are no relationships. Hell is the place where people who were husbands and wives on earth hate one another. Hate one another with a total bitter hatred. Hell is a place where there's no love, no friendship, no tenderness, no kindness, no companionship. Hell is a place where there is only loneliness and rage and bitterness, where every creature hates every other creature, every other thing that's there. Hatred that doesn't waver for a moment. Hell is death, everlasting death. It's the death of relationships, it's the death of love, it's the death of everything that gives humanity value. The creatures in hell have been stripped of the image of God. They're not capable of any sort of relationship. A man says, I'll go to hell to be with my wife. A girl says, I'll go to hell if that's the cost of keeping my boyfriend. And they go to hell. And they find that the person that they loved so much, that they put in the place of God, has become a monster whom they hate and who hates them and will hate them forever. People who choose something, anything, rather than God, finish up with nothing. Adam said, if I have to choose between Eve and God, I choose Eve. And in making that choice, in putting another good in the place of God, in putting one of God's gifts in the place of God the giver, Adam was choosing death. He was choosing total ruin, total bankruptcy, total loneliness, total misery. I've asked the question before. I ask it again for those of you who have never repented, who've never turned to God through Jesus Christ. What is it that's holding you back? What is the thing that you're holding on to and putting in the place of God? Is it a person? Is it a hobby? What is it that is so important to you, that you love so much, that you say, I can't give this up, even if it means losing God? I tell you, whatever you cling to, whatever you put in the place of God, in the end you'll curse and you'll hate that thing. In the end it'll bring you no satisfaction. In the end it'll bring you only eternal misery and eternal regrets. What shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? In the day you eat of that tree, you shall surely die. Adam chose death, but we're invited to choose life through Jesus Christ.